This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Chris Riegel, my colleague and remarker on the events of the moment. He is the CEO of Scholar.com. This is the Scholar Report. Scholar.com is a global technology firm with business on all the major continents. So it's a way of reading world trade, and world trade has been in turmoil at least since Liberation Day at the beginning of April, from the President of the United States announcing that he was using emergency powers granted to him by Congress to impose tariffs not only on our adversary, China, and other bad actors for imports and exports, but also on our trading partners, Canada and Mexico and the EU. And now we have chaos versus hope, writes the New York Times headline. America's trading partners react cautiously to tariff block. The story about a court that I did not know was considering these matters. The Trump administration's threat to impose 50% tariffs on the European Union and steep tariffs of varying sizes on other critical American trading partners, writes the New York Times, hung in limbo after a panel of U.S. federal judges blocked a set of across-the-board charges. Chris, a very good evening to you. I begin with this because it's dominating the world in all headlines. It'd be like those wonderful 1940s movies when, in order to advance the story, they flash nothing but headlines concentrating on the skullduggery of the villains and the extreme victimization of our heroes in world media, or maybe New York media. Flash, flash, flash. But here we have a flash that genuinely looks to have surprised the market. The tariffs ordinarily are understood to be the purview of the Congress. That's the legislative branch. That's the first article of the Constitution. The president using emergency powers, the second article of the Constitution, the executive, did not usurp but took control of the tariffs, something that Congress, I'm reading, has over the years acceded to the president in many instances without much of a fuss. The court, however, rules, this is a court appointed by presidents, one party can have five of the nine votes. That's maximum according to the rules of the court. And right now the Democrats have five votes, the Republicans have four. That is appointed by Democratic or Republican president. A three-man panel of the nine-man court has ruled that the president's actions were illegal from the first. There we are, Chris. The buildup is everything, but the payoff right now looks to be even more uncertainty. How do you read this and your franchise partners around the world? How can we guess how they will read this? Good day to you.
Good day, John. This morning when coming into the office, I was greeted by several emails from supply chain in China congratulating on the end of the trade war and the end of tariff policy because of the court ruling. So if not for a domestic audience, it certainly caught a foreign audience with the ruling. My guess would be that there'll be some back and forth, and ultimately this will have to go to the Supreme Court to determine who really has the authority and the ability to make these actions. But I believe there's both the domestic international audiences watching this closely. Is this the end of trade action and rebalancing of trade? I'd say not in the least, and there's probably still several moves on this chessboard to come.
Yes, the New York Times, anticipating your remark, writes, President Trump's top aides had told the court in recent days that an adverse ruling could weaken the administration's negotiating position and imperil ongoing talks. No kidding. Okay. What about the price? That's everybody's question. What about price? We've been warned, threatened, promised for weeks now that this means higher prices and inflation and a slowdown and a recession. Does that go away, or does that become even more impossible to guess?
John, I think it's still impossible to guess. It's safe to say that with the opening up of the energy sector, the fuel related inflation seems to be tapering and or becoming more beneficial to consumers and to businesses. And that may translate back on the inflation side with announcements from Walmart of potentially raising prices and others. Price raises are extremely common in retail for lots of different factors. Is this now a core inflationary driver? Is this part of the trade war with China? There's lots of different factors to that, but it can also simply be leaders in categories taking profit when they can. So lots of different ways to ascribe blame for price increase. But will prices increase in different sectors? Yeah, quite possibly.
One more thought. I'm told that the president changed directions on some aspect of his trade policy, perhaps delaying some aspect of it. I can't remember what the presenting moment was. When he was told something about empty shelves at the big box stores, they all gathered around him one Monday, either remotely or in person. Are we going to see empty shelves now? Can we tell?
So, John, it's definitely accurate that there's substantial disruption still in international trade with the decline of orders from the U.S. to China and that uncertainty. Will you see empty shelves? Probably in seasonal items. It's quite possible. Will you see that in the fundamentals? Unlikely, but not impossible. In these very tightly controlled and very tightly just-in-time tight markets, it doesn't take much to throw that off. But from a retailer's perspective, not only does the administration not want to see an empty shelf, but a retailer doesn't want to present an empty shelf. It's bad for their business. So I think it will be controlled or minimized, if at all possible, wherever possible.
In another direction, we have an announcement from the Secretary of State, Mr. Rubio. This is NPR headline. Rubio says U.S. will, quote, aggressively, end quote, revoke visas for many Chinese students. The clarification is under the president's leadership, the U.S. State Department will work with the Department of Homeland Security to aggressively revoke visas for Chinese students, including those with connections to the Chinese Communist Party or studying in critical fields. We will also revise visa criteria to enhance scrutiny of all future applications from the People's Republic of China and Hong Kong. You work very carefully in technology sector, and you work with technology firms, and you are a technology firm. What does this mean for your hiring practices or those of your trading partners?
So, John, this is a very complex challenge because the Chinese diaspora and or Chinese citizens, Chinese nationals, in many cases are very well regarded, great researchers, very hard workers, very beneficial to many of the companies they serve. The question for American and Western companies is, where is that line and where is the risk profile to say having a very talented Chinese member of the staff or member of the team and adding benefit to the company, but also if that person ever goes back to China, is ever requested by the Ministry of State Security in China to take intellectual property with them, it's a very tricky problem. In some categories, that's easily banned. In other categories, it really comes to, are we better as an open society to bring in students, have them see freedom and opportunity and take that back with them to China? Or are they simply taking back our IP? So a challenge without a really great answer, to be honest.
You have a facility on the mainland. You have workers on the mainland and in back offices, I'm presuming everywhere, Hong Kong, Singapore, who have family members throughout the mainland who are striving to educate their children, educate themselves in order to win worthy jobs for the future. All that's going on. Are they, to your presumption, when you meet one or more of these workers, are you presuming their advantage in education is because they are related to the party? Or is this something that's so widespread now, you don't need to be a party member to do well at school?
So, John, in those coming to the West, because of the costs of Western education and the fact that Chinese students are essential now to many of these universities' balance sheets because they pay full price for the tuition. Those are typically princelings or members of families that are associated with the party and higher-ups within that Chinese social structure. The average Chinese within China in the domestic universities, incredibly competitive, extremely smart, but they don't have that Western-style education opportunity that we have here to see the outside world. So most of the people coming over would have affiliations. Doesn't necessarily mean that they don't have the same desires for success and drive that we do to be successful. It's trying to find that right balance between the two.
And the employer, My guess, human nature being what it is, you would avoid risk off, risk on. This would be risk on to hire anyone who had a good education outside of China. Would that be a fair guess of how they're going to do this?
I think it's well known within the tech community that any Chinese nationals or people with tight ties back to China are a potential risk point right. to be activated on the intellectual property side. That being said, it's unfortunate. Many of the Chinese are great people. They just happen to have to live under a totalitarian government.
Chris Riegel is the CEO of Scholar.com, a global technology firm. Business on all the major continents. This is the Scholar Report.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.